Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
Yes, I've never been to a wedding, and like I have like maybe, you're one of like four people who could get married in my life.
Yeah.
And one of you fuckers has to get married. I'm getting to the point where I will buy a ring and hand it to someone if they will just have a fucking wedding. I want to listen to fucking shitty white people music playing. I want to drink at an open bar. I want to groove. I've never been to one.
Unfortunately, we have both decided, Neve and I, that we want to do a town hall.
I have a gun. Have a wedding. I'll give you a ring. I won't shoot my gun. Play fucking Wonderwall, whatever they play at weddings, I wouldn't know. And I at least used to have the small consolation. I'd never been to a funeral either.
Sure.
But now I've been to two funerals.
Yeah.
No weddings.
Yeah.
So I need three people to get married to restore the balance.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
And it's just like, get fucking married. Get married. I have friends who've been dating people for like close to a decade now. Get married. Buy a ring. Propose. Love. Followers, if you have a wedding, send us an invite. What's it like? I've never seen love.
That's.
I've never seen it. I want to know. I want to be like, I'm so happy for them. I want to be best man. Invite me to your wedding! Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your never seen love set. Let me drink at an open bar, craving the open bar host, Matthew Olenchek. Joined as always by my apparently wedding going co-host, yeah, co-husband, Harrison Poole.
I've been to a couple, yeah.
Oh, careful. We're doing Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension.
And the greatest crime of this movie is that we never got Buckaroo Banzai versus the World Crime Syndicate.
We did not get the movie. There was a book released in 2021 that fans seemed to all but, like, disown.
Should have got the fucking sequel. We got 40 fucking James Bond. These bullshit spy movies.
Okay, but they make money in a way that Buckaroo Banzai didn't, unfortunately. I like this movie a lot. I'm gonna add this to the list of movies, this like growing but still kind of small list of movies where this would have been fundamental to me if I saw this as a teenager.
Yeah.
But seeing it as a 27-year-old man, I'm like, I just enjoy this a lot. Like, I don't think it's going to become a part of my personality, but it will be a cultural touchstone that like I'll be able to pull back from.
It is nuts who's in this movie.
Dude, this cast
Mr. Krabs.
So stacked. Yes.
Mr. Krabs is in this fucking movie.
John Lithgow plays an Italian named Lizardo and an alien named
John Worfen, yeah, because they're all named John.
Because they're all named John.
Which you'd think, oh, that's just them not understanding how like human names work, but they address each other as John, and other aliens who are not privy to their plans also call them John, which means that all these aliens' names are just John.
If I saw this movie in high school or college, this would be a top 10 movie for me. As an adult with a fully formed brain who has kind of like seen the movies who are going to be fundamental to his personality at this point in his life, it's so fun, and it will be
one. Brain isn't done forming. We can strap him down and just make him watch it and repeat like a
Clockwork Orange
and change him as a person.
I saw Clockwork Orange in theaters, and let me tell you
when
that,
it came out?
No. Re-release whatever anniversary some re-release with 2001, and I am shocked that that movie is not more core to my personality than it is. That event is core to my personality. Like, I talk about like watching that movie and how
it's
that
probably good that movie isn't
me.
More core to your
but
personality.
That movie, like,
I think you'd be a worse person if that was core to your personality,
or I would be better because like it, like my brain would opposite it, like maybe. It would imprint on me so deeply that it'd be like I need to do everything everything I can to be the exact opposite of that.
Yeah, that does seem like a you thing. It's a good important movie, but if someone's, it's like a Fight Club thing where they're like, this is core to my personality and it's Clockwork Orange. I'm like, oh.
It's a red flag. It's not necessarily.
It's like American Psycho, Fight Club, Clockwork Orange.
I think it depends on the if a man in his teens to his 40s says those movies, it's a red flag and I have follow-up questions. Generally speaking, the women I know, the couple who like Clockwork Orange is a top 10 for them.
Oh, green flag.
I'm not. Yeah.
If a woman looks me in the eye and says my favorite movie of all time is Fight Club, American Psycho, or Clockwork Orange, I'm in.
I truly would be like,
I'm like, so, oh, you're insane. Let's go.
Yeah, you're insane. And I want to talk film with you. And I want to talk philosophy with you. You want to sleep with them. I want to be their best friend.
I want to put them on an altar.
I know.
Plinth.
So it's good to know that the altar can be reserved for real people. It's not the Florence
Pugh. Florence
Pugh isn't real, but like people who could exist.
Oh, buddy, I'm willing to, buddy, this is the Matthew Olenchak guarantee. I'm willing to put any woman on an altar. I'm willing to put any woman I meet way higher than I should. Yeah. As like an emotionally healthy person.
Yeah, I hope it. I hope it works out. I hope it becomes healthier. Do we want to go through this movie?
It's like if there was a guy in a Japanese movie, and they're like, he's half American, and his name was like Kamikaze Ballpark. He's so cool.
If you wanted to do a parody, write a parody or something and call it Kamikaze Ballpark.
And he has the, I do know the one little fun film fact I have is that the watermelon is there to see if the producers are paying attention.
Yep. Because if they never mentioned it in the dailies, then they knew that the dude wasn't watching them.
So they could do whatever they wanted, which is called make a masterpiece. Do I want to get into this plot? Famously, John Lithgow said that it took him like 2 hours to describe what this movie was about to anybody. And pretty much every critique of this movie had nothing to say about the production or anything about it. It was just that it's really hard to say what this movie's about.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. It's about a fucking rock star gunslinger scientist who goes to the eighth dimension and then has to fight, like, alien Hitler who's trying to get out of the eighth dimension.
Played by John Lithgow, but John Lithgow is also a human scientist.
Yeah.
Or at one point was a human scientist and then he half entered the eighth dimension and was possessed by the alien.
Yeah, he's possessed by John.
Because they mentioned later that like the spit like gets in their brain and like they hear the voices.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Also, all of the aliens. So War of the Worlds was real?
Yeah, War of the Worlds was real.
But then, so the idea that War of the Worlds was a hoax. Was that a government psyop?
That was a government psyop.
Or was that planned by the alien? Or was Orson Welles told by the aliens?
Oh, it's one of the two. What I want to know is why was Orson Welles reporting on this? Well, of all people, Orson Welles is like, oh man, aliens are invading to the radio waves.
Yeah. Why would you have this like 23-year-old like
movie guy?
Well, no, he wasn't a movie guy.
He wasn't a movie guy.
He was a theater
yet?
Guy.
Oh fuck! It's even worse than I thought. Remembered, yeah. Some theater guys like time to report on the most important event of our time.
Yeah.
Also, how do you? I don't think it's that easy to apply to get a social. Maybe it was that easy to apply to get a social security card. We used to be really loosey goosey with social security because originally social security wasn't supposed to be like your identity. It was just a way to like. Identify you by the government for stuff like that, like a phone number. And so like you'd find like a lot of like old possessions like bikes or guns, people have put their social security numbers on them.
Yeah.
Because back then it's just a way to be like, this is mine. This is my true name. But then we made it like the nexus of everything. So maybe you could just be like, hey, I'm John Feathers.
As opposed to today where you're kind of just born with a social security, like you get one basically upon birth.
They divine it, yeah.
Yeah.
They bring out a federal soothsayer who spits out your code.
An oracle that like whispers the number into the air.
And then it's like...
And luckily the doctor or the nurse or the hospital stenographer is able to...
It lands on your forehead and goes...
The scar fades after a few weeks, but you have to write it down.
That's why you have to hide your baby's forehead so people can't steal their identity.
Exactly.
Hence the baby bonnet.
Yep.
I'm halfway to being Buckaroo Banzai. Look at all the science I know. I need like one more gun and a dead wife who has a twin.
But doesn't so Penny doesn't know she has a twin.
No, she's adopted. She's
given
up.
Do you think his dead wife knew she had a twin?
I do not think so. Wow, because the names are very similar. But no, I do not think she knew. I think she would have told Buckaroo Banzai they'd all be reunited as a big happy
family.
The
dead wife also adopted, or did their parents just keep one kid?
I wouldn't live in a world where they keep one kid.
And how do you decide which twin?
They're exactly the same. You just grab one.
They're identical. Maybe they were also scientists and they wanted to test nature versus nurture.
I think they just named one Peggy and one Penny, and then they're like, for some reason, I think Peggy's the better name, and takes that one. Is it leave Penny?
I haven't seen Silicon Valley, but it's like when I've seen this clip where one of the main characters was like adopted, and he was like the third kid, and then they had another kid after him.
Hell yeah. I like when you do, I love when I hear like a fucked up abortion story, a fucked up adoption story. I was like, that's fucked up. That's great. Your parents are so fucking cool. What are they doing?
How is that cool?
Just fucking, I don't know. It's, you know, well, you know, being cool, like there's like the idea of what is something, what makes someone cool is really boils down to like a self-confidence. Like a coolness is like not like people who, it's like how, like if you worry about being cool, you'll never be cool.
Sure.
Because being cool truly is just about like being yourself and not caring about like what anyone thinks, which is why Jeff Goldblum is cool. Even though you look at this guy, you're like, this guy's fucking weird, but he's cool because he doesn't give a shit. He just shows up and goes, and then like leaves. He's like, that guy was the coolest man I've ever met.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be at that level to just be like, I'm gonna do something really fucked up right now. I had twins. I'm going to give one of them up for adoption.
I don't think that's cool, though.
Put on your shades, get on your motorcycle.
That's sociopathic and cruel. I don't think that's cool.
No, being adopted, it builds character. And what, you want gay people to have children?
Splitting up twins or like raising two
if
kids.
If they don't know they're twins, what does it matter? You know,
it doesn't matter if the kids don't know they're twins. You know they're twins. You had two kids and you had to pick pick a kid to raise.
That's easiest choice you ever make in a situation like this. They're literally identical. You can't tell them apart.
Okay.
If you had like a boy and a girl, sure. Now you're making judgment calls, right? But if you're just two identical babies.
John Lithgow, the actor, plays this character named John Warfin, who was this Italian scientist named something Eduardo Lizardo or some dumb shit like that. And he gets possessed by John Warfin when he half enters the eighth dimension in a weird failed experiment. And then he gets sent to a psych unit. And then seemingly for no goddamn reason, he just like decides that it's time. Oh, no, there is a reason. It's because they're overthruster, finally.
Yeah, he now has the means to leave.
Oh, another one of my fun facts is the overthruster, the model or something, is called something something 88. And that's why the DeLorean in Back to the Future needs to reach 88 miles an hour. Because the guy who designed the DeLorean also designed the vehicles.
Yeah, that makes
movie.
Sense because they're pretty identical.
Yeah.
They have like the same like little
yep.
triangle design.
The flux capacitor and the overthruster. He designed both of those cars.
I feel like Buckaroo Banzai is like 70s British occultism, where it's influenced so much of our culture, and we just like, I could probably do a lot of research and find out the Buckaroo Banzai, but like 70s occultism has created like so much of our fucking culture from the because every like British chaos magician, that's Alan Moore,
yep,
that's Grant Morrison,
yep,
that's Warhammer, that's Judge Dredd, that's everything that comes out of like Thatcherite England,
mm-hmm.
And I wonder if Buckaroo Banzai is a similar footprint that we just don't see.
Almost certainly, in a way that like,
I mean, black aliens,
yeah,
red aliens,
yep,
checkers,
but yeah, it's like it's in a way that like, because Freaks and Geeks ended, Judd Apatow went on a revenge,
he went on the John Wick, but for movies,
yes,
Rampage,
where it's like knocked up, Forgetting Sarah Marshall, super bad, but where he's
my
just
hairdresser
like, I'm gonna fundamentally...
really likes Forgetting Sarah Marshall,
yeah,
she's a big fan of it,
yeah.
She wants to know why you're such a fan of breakup movies.
I don't know
because you've never had a breakup, so
no.
That's a... I get it. I really like Roots.
Yeah.
But I've never been a slave.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fucking who's in that? Who plays his dad? His dad's in something.
His dad's in Blackula.
Yeah, that was the connection.
Yeah, we brought it up in that episode. Also, I mean, this cast is... I think we mentioned it a tiny bit earlier. This cast is so stacked.
Much like Roots. Very stacked. Now, I've convinced several people that Roots Town is named after the show Roots.
Jesus Christ.
See, the secret is, and this is how you two can be a... much like me and Buckaroo Banzai, a cowboy rock star scientist, is that if you say something dumb enough with enough conviction, people assume it's true, because why would you... there's no way you'd lie about something so utterly stupid.
Yeah.
If you just go with utter conviction, no, it's named after the... Roots Town's named after Roots.
But...
the director was born there. And they go, oh. And you just say it enough. You bring it up in casual conversation.
Yeah.
Anytime Roots comes up, you know, all the time in casual conversation, you go... oh, Roots Town's named after it. Eventually, people are like, yeah, Roots Town's named after Roots.
If I were to, like, talk to someone about this movie where it was, like, Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Jeff Goldblum, and, like, a young Jeff Goldblum were right before he was, like, fully popped.
A young Clancy, too.
Yes. You would assume, based on this cast, that this movie was a hit.
Everyone says it's because pretty much everyone said it's because the narrative's too confusing.
It's one of those that if you sit down and think about what happened, it's convoluted.
It's hard to pitch.
If you just watch this movie and let it wash over you.
It makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. Because you're only picking up 10% of the details.
Like,
so...
it's not that complex of a movie. It's hard to pitch. It's not necessarily hard to pitch. It's hard to pitch in a way... that makes you want to go see it.
Yeah.
I don't understand how. I mean, if someone said, hey, you want to go see this movie? It features a scientist who's also a rock star, who's also a gunslinger, and he's a child militia. I feel like I'm in.
Well, yeah, that's your personality.
And Peter Sellers in it, and Jeff Goldblum, Clancy. Yeah, I want to go see this movie. I want to see a child militia that they fly helicopters. And they threaten the Secretary of Defense.
Yeah, and at one point they just get into not a screaming match, but like a dick measuring contest with the president, who's in a gurney because his back is hurt for no explainable reason.
I'm a huge fan of that one kid taking the money, by the way.
Yes, just stealing the 20 and then not doing anything about it. Yes,
as like the Secretary of Defense is trying to bribe a kid with an assault rifle with $20 to get a device that lets you travel between dimensions.
I like that when I have to remember the black alien who helps John, who helps Buckaroo in the Hong Kong gang. What is John Powers or something?
Yeah.
That seemingly at random, it will cut between like him as a human and him as an alien and him as a human and him as an alien.
I like, he has a lot of good lines towards the end. I like that he's like, it appears to be a thermopod, but poorly built.
Yes.
I'm a big fan of, I failed flight school. I'm a diplomat.
But that scene specifically is one of those that, like, as a filmmaker, I was just like, you just filmed that scene twice. And then in the edit, we're like, this is going to be so fun.
How do they do the electric kisses, do you think?
I mean, in the way that you do electricity generally, I'm assuming it's drawn on.
That's what I was thinking. Or I was thinking maybe he had a battery in his mouth.
Oh my gosh. He did not have a battery.
That was my first thought was, I need a little battery in his mouth.
Yeah. Probably this is one of those where probably Earl Ray, the creator actually owns the rights to this movie in some way, probably, or at least the rights to these characters. So we should pitch to him that we Kickstarter our remake of
Buckaroo
Banzai
versus Tron.
Well, no.
Buckaroo.
Write our own Buckaroo Banzai
story. I'm pitching
story.
A la Alien versus Predator. Two of the most influential, underrated sci-fi franchises of our time. I want to see him build his own Tron ray and then get Troned. And then, like, there's a light cycle coming at them. And they just pull out their guns and shoot it.
In a world where we're not dealing with the Disney franchise legal rights, what is our Buckaroo Banzai?
I mean,
adventure?
We're following the canon of the film. It has to be versus the World Crime Syndicate.
So we just adapt the World Crime League book.
No, we make it good. We ask him what he originally intended, and we just get a straight short synopsis that works from there. I think in the World Crime Syndicate, you obviously have Saddam Hussein, who are 80s criminals.
I don't know. I would read.
It had to be. It wasn't Osama. Like, who were the big boogeymen of the 80s? Who did the 80s people fear? Viet Cong? The entire Viet Cong?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think Adolf Hitler's in there somehow.
In the World Crime League?
Yeah. I think it's like Hitler, Saddam Hussein, Al Capone.
That feels late for Al Capone.
It is. So it's also late for Hitler.
No, but like Hitler, yeah.
He's dead.
No, Hitler is in Argentina. Al Capone is dead, though. Al Capone had syphilis.
Al Capone.
You can't fake a syphilis.
Al Capone Jr.
Okay.
Who is indistinguishable from Al Capone.
So, okay.
I see the most.
So first we have to read the World Crime League book. Pick the parts that work. Leave the parts that don't, and then fill in the gaps.
Lainey Gibson Jr.
Sure.
You could probably use it like a serial killer. That was a good serial killer time, too.
Okay.
I don't think he has a name, but he's definitely at all the table scenes. Like a burglar. Like a black and white stripe masked
yes.
burglar. And I don't think we...
I mean, I don't think we're making Dr. Horrible sing-along blog, too. With that being said, hypothetically, it could work. Also, you almost certainly Dr. Horrible is in some way influenced by Buckaroo Banzai.
Oh, 100%.
If in no nothing else than the aesthetics.
Joss Whedon and Neil Patrick Harris and Nathan Fillion have all seen this movie.
Yeah.
And the guy from Big Bang Theory.
So do you mispronounce the shit on purpose?
What do you mean?
Big Bang Theory?
Yeah, as I said, Big Bang Theory.
Okay, so yes. Sometimes you do the, like, World Crime Syndicate when it's World Crime League, and I'm like, oh, okay. I totally get where that happens.
Badonka.
Cool. So you're just being an asshole. Okay. So obviously we got to bring... What are the casts to do in nowadays?
I think they're all free.
So Peter Weller becomes the Bruce Campbell, like, okay.
Yeah.
I'm honestly also, I mean, Evil Dead was successful more than Buckaroo Banzai. I'm a little surprised, and Peter Weller's is not a B-movie actor. Bruce Campbell's an excellent actor, but Peter Weller's is like an established A-movie.
A foundational actor of the time.
Yes. But I was going to say, I'm surprised that he didn't, like Buckaroo Banzai didn't become like an Ash. Like a cult figure. I mean, it did, but like you didn't really get anything other than a book released 30 years later.
He could beat up Ash, no problem.
He'd solve the
whole Necronomicon, no issue.
This movie was directed by W.D. Richter, which...
inventor of the Richter scale.
Yeah. Grandfather to Andy Richter.
It's why Andy Richter always says things like, my dad invented the earthquake.
Yeah.
That's what the Richter scale is. People think it's a way to measure earthquakes. No, that was... He's like, I've made this thing. It's called an earthquake. This is how you measure it. And I said, why would you do that?
I'm shocked that he wasn't one of the writers on this movie. I mean, as a director, he probably had some say of the overall story. But, I mean, unless this was a hired hand. But I'm shocked that he wasn't a writer on this movie. Because have you seen Big Trouble in Little China? He wrote that movie. And
I believe,
they have the same vibes.
I believe he created the character, then shopped it off to someone to write. Or like a friend to write it.
Yeah.
I think his friend wrote it. He's like, hey, you want to write something? I'll direct it.
Yeah, because Earl Ray...
because they both inspired by like kung fu movies. Because
yes.
He says that this is like the nonstop action like kung fu movie. Was that series of kung fu movies that they parodied in Community? It's in the paintball thing when Chang comes in and the Chinese music's playing.
Yeah.
And it's parodying a movie. Fun fact that exactly. they had that song is just for Community. They had like they found the poem and wrote music for it.
Oh hell yeah.
It's completely original invention.
I don't remember. Because I know the first one directed by Justin Lin is just like...
Do you say that people make the sad sack men make really good art? Why is that?
What?
I was thinking about it, like Dan Harmon makes some good shit. Sad man.
Yeah.
What is it about that?
A need to feel seen and a disgust for authority.
My favorite thing about Community is just watching all... it's Joel Hader's the lead, right? Who's the...
Joel McHale.
Who's Joel Hader?
Bill Hader and Joel McHale.
No, Joel Hader is the guy who makes those rotoscope videos.
I was like, did you confuse me?
Every interview where he just talks about Chevy, he goes, yeah, he's a dick.
Yeah.
Those are the most nonchalant.
He tried to be professional for a couple seasons, and then Chevy was just went off on the
Which
show.
Which is wild, because everyone that's worked with him is like, this guy's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
So why do you got to be the one?
to bring it back to Big Trouble in Little China, he ruined John Carpenter's career. Now, I enjoy most of the back half of John Carpenter's career, but there's a sheer defining line, and it is working with Chevy Chase. Have you seen Memoir of an Invisible Man?
No.
Okay, I'm not going to bring it on the pod probably, but I might. It's an interesting novelty piece because it's like an actually great director directing a vanity piece for a piece of shit actor, and it's these two people like trying to vie for control in a way that doesn't work at all. The first 30 minutes kind of work, and then once Chevy Chase decides to be Chevy Chase, it's also a movie in which he's an invisible man yet somehow does brownface. But like,
hell yeah,
yeah, because it's Chevy Chase. And he was famous in the 70s. Like, you have, he had to. It was his character, you know?
Yeah. I could get so famous that I could just be colossal piece of shit and still get work.
He doesn't really get work, though, anymore.
He's old now. He doesn't need work, but he got, like, a community.
Yeah. I mean,
he's still this public figure.
I mean, I'm going to bring the Saturday Night Movie on, but the Saturday Night Movie did the impossible, and it made me understand what was so charismatic about Chevy Chase, because I live in the future of modern Chevy Chase. And so all of the vacation movies and like Memoirs of an Invisible Man and like Chevy Chase movies that existed pre like him being publicly known as an asshole, it are skewed I don't see the charisma.
Like when I watched like the Gerald Ford bits he does, I'm like, I get it.
Okay.
Like he's very talented in what he did.
Yeah.
Like he's incredibly talented in being just like this very deadpan, dry, in a way that modern SNL isn't, where it's just like, I'm just going to deliver these lines straight. Like a Norm MacDonald, sure. Norm MacDonald always has a smile at the end. Chevy Chase never did. He just do like, this is the joke.
Sure.
And it's funny because he's playing it completely fucking straight.
Yeah, I'm not saying Chevy Chase is, like, untalented. He's incredibly talented. I just never got the charisma because everything was shrouded by modern Chevy Chase. But Saturday Night, Corey Michaels, something like that. Corey Michael Smith, he made me understand where I was like, oh, this guy, I get how this guy was so enigmatic. Yeah, I'll probably bring that on in September for the actual 50th anniversary of SNL. But yeah, honestly, I might just bring Big Trouble. This has been brought up so many times. I might just bring Big Trouble for next week. Because I know we're recording Valerian on Thursday. I don't know when that episode is going to come out, whether it's going to come out like end of April or beginning of May or however editing Harrison.
We can never have a Brandon episode which airs consecutively with another episode.
No.
Because the same thing with the Troll Hunter where it's out of the timeline.
Well, the thing with Brandon episodes, or at least this episode, Valerian will be the decider of how Brandon episodes are going to go, because the Troll Hunter episode was 2.5 hours.
It's too long to put on YouTube
in the old editing style. So with the new editing style, it may be a little bit shorter, unless he has like a lot to say and it's like a 4-hour record and then it just becomes a 3-hour episode.
I'm gonna have a lot to say about Cara Delevingne, whatever, however you say your
name. Cara Delevingne.
Yeah, same thing.
Okay. But so I don't know when that's coming out, and I am the only editor, so I need time to edit that in the background while we have other this feels like it's as good a place as any to stop, I guess. Did you have any final thoughts?
I give a little electric kiss to Penny.
Okay.
Oh, I did have a final thought that's actually directly related to that. I am such an obsessive fan of that happening. And then them like fading in the alien. He goes, it's no big deal. Like these aliens are like, bring her back to life so they can fuck. Like they draw attention. They draw direct attention to that. These aliens are like, we gotta let our man get his rocks off.
Yeah. I like how they did the Reservoir Dogs title sequence at the end.
One of the best in movies.
Yes.
Also, like,
but like all the characters walking to, like, from different places.
It'd be wild to be dating someone that you have to preface with, now this isn't my dead wife.
I mean,
because she looks exactly like her.
Sure, I guess. how many of his, does he have any friends outside of the Hong Kong?
Well, the one lady who is at his home recognizes her, and he's friends with like everyone.
But was his wife also a public person?
I'm sure he seemed like the man. He seems like a wife guy.
But maybe she didn't want to be in the public eye.
I'm sure they saw her though. Like he'd show pictures. He seemed like a guy who would show pictures of his wife. The president's like, Buckaroo, you have to stop Australia from launching nukes at New Zealand. And he's like, this is my wife. we got a dog together.
Ah!
But like, I think like a lot of people, there's people who know you're dating Geneva and know what she looks like, but aren't necessarily like, know Geneva.
Yeah.
Imagine if, heaven forbid, Geneva died. And then a couple years later, you found her exact twin who also dyed her hair the exact same way. And then you start going places with her, you would have to preface that with, this isn't Geneva, this is Beneva.
No, you just don't mention it.
Fuck
at all.
No, it's one of the middle letters. So instead of Geneva, it'd be like Janita. Or at least you'd have to do what his friends do, and I'd have to be like, that isn't Geneva, that's Janita. It's her twin.
No, we just bring no mention to it whatsoever. I think that's the best option.
You have to, though.
Do you?
Yeah, you do. If it looks exactly like your dead wife. Also, if your Buckaroo bonds, that you, there's a chance you could have brought your dead wife back, so you have to be clear this isn't her.
Is it mentioned what his wife passed from?
No.
Because I know they implied that it was something like he couldn't save her, but I didn't know if it was like from a mission or like from a cancer or like...
No, he could cure cancer, so it can't be that.
Okay.
I don't believe that Buckaroo Banzai couldn't cure cancer.
Or that could have been like the one thing, like, anyway. Okay.
It's revealed in the crime syndicate showdown.
Yeah. I recommend this movie. I like this movie a lot. I've rented this movie like half a dozen times from the library and then never watched it. Like it always just expired and I was like, oh shit, life got in the way. So thank you for bringing this and finally crossing this off my list. This truly is the kind of movie that like I imagined when I pitched this podcast to you. Like something that has just been on my list for like on one of our lists forever. We're just like, how have you not seen this? This seems so up your alley.
Buckaroo Banzai is a fucking classic.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's it. Do you want to do socials?
Yeah, if you want to join our child militia that we're forming for the podcast Boys Child Militia, first off, you have to be a child, no adults. But please email with your parents' permission your resume and how good you are with a gun to twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com or any other things. Again, eternally stands Quora fan fiction, $5 if it's good, X reader, or you know, anything. If you're about to commit a big crime, send us your manifesto so we can be the ones to break it. If you want to follow me on Instagram, that's Midwest_magician. Our YouTube, where you can find Brandon episodes, is a Two Men and a Movie podcast. We can't upload them, folks. They're too big.
Oh, it won't let us upload?
Troll Hunter's not on YouTube because it won't upload. It's too long of a video.
Oh, shit.
It's too big. If you want to follow us else on anything else, the show's on Instagram or on other things too. Two Men Movie Podcasts on most platforms.
You can find me on like Instagram, TikTok, Lemonade Threads. That's harrisonpoole.com. 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 Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. Tune in at some point in the next few weeks for the Brandon episode. And honestly, next week, fuck it. We'll do Big Trouble in Little China.
Town.
What?
Town. Right? Chinatown?
No, it's just China. Big Trouble in Little China.
Is Little China somewhere?
San Francisco.
Your little mouth?
All right. So
it's this tiny.
Have a good book. One. Thank you so much.
Kisses.
For listening.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.